Well, hello. You are listening to KVSH LP, Voice of Vashon, on Vashon Island. And this is Stirring the Pot. I'm Linda Nygaard. I'll be your host today. Actually, there's two of us. Tom's the co-host. Tom Conway's here with me. And we're going to tell you some stories today. We might have a little tit for tat. We might solve some mysteries.
Hey, no dirty talk.
Hey. How are you, Tom?
I'm good. Yeah? I'm good. I'm enjoying this sort of creeping in spring weather where it's sort of a tease where
isn't it heavenly?
Exactly. It says like kind of spring, but kind of
not. Have you smelled it yet?
I beg your pardon?
Have you smelled spring?
Like
there's that thing that happens with the air.
Yeah. Yes, I have. And
have
the light.
You?
And the light.
And the light. I love the light.
Especially sort of oddly, it's not a floral fragrance, but a kind of a woodsy fragrance.
It's a woodsy clean.
Mossy.
Woodsy clean.
It would be like a really good like Irish soap springs flavor. It's scotchy moss grass bark face. Yeah.
We need to do a commercial with you.
We need to do some fake commercials.
Yeah, we should. I think so. Well, so how's your week been? How was Valentine's Day? Do you practice Valentine's Day?
You know,
Do you practice Valentine's Day?
Do I practice? I do. I stand on the corner and go, "Love me, please, love me,
I'm
somebody." Yeah, exactly. Hey, you look nice. Do you want a date?
Want to come on in?
Come on in. I make pie. Yeah. Usually have to lure them with pie. It was really nice. I had, a couple, I was lucky enough to have dinner at a couple friends' house on a Saturday and a Sunday, on Valentine's Day and then the next day.
Oh, wow.
And
that was a good celebration.
It was totally great. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we had a really, what I love about how people are cooking now, at least sort of my take on it, is that they're sort of doing what all the chefs have been telling you to do for the longest time, which is cook seasonally, keep it simple. Mm-hmm. And so we had one dish was like, we had potatoes au gratin, and then we had a grilled bok choy with this sort of, I think it had sesame oil and rice vinegar on it. And then a lovely little meat dish, really simple,
nice.
Grilled.
Nice.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's nice to have the company. a friend of mine, we were going to have coffee on Valentine's Day, and we didn't even think about it. Valentine's Day, it was just time for coffee.
Was this a rendezvous or an assignation, or was it a friend?
It was a friend.
Friend.
No, it wasn't a friend.
Okay, just
it
checking.
Was a friend.
Okay.
A good friend.
All right.
And so she and I were going to have coffee, and then she realized that her significant other had some band practice or something that night. So, I said, well, just come over for dinner then. So she came over and talk about keep it simple. I made a wonderful carrot soup. I kind of invented one. You know, I went through those juicy, wonderful winter carrots.
They're awesome.
Oh my gosh, they're so sweet and so good. So, and I love carrot ginger, but I wanted something more. So I just started throwing things in the pot.
Yeah, and local carrots really do make a difference.
They really do.
Yeah.
They really do. And so I put in cumin and paprika and curry powder and lots of garlic and some sour cream and some cream cheese.
Oh
my gosh. It was the smoothest, just a little bit, not
consider
very
that,
much.
Consider that lily gilded.
Oh man, was it good. It was so smooth and really deeply spiced. I loved it. It was really good.
And probably a nice sour charge at the end, you know, like
a little
you
bit,
have
yeah,
with
that, like as if you'd put
sour
lemon.
Cream in or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I did put sour cream too.
Nice.
So it had everything in it and it was really good. And so we just had bread and olives and grapes and a bowl of soup and a great chat. Just really.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
So where was her dude?
Her dude was band practicing.
Oh, okay.
In the garage, and she had to get out of there anyway. So.
Oh, good. And so she didn't go like, oh, I see he loves his musician friends better than he likes
me. No, there wasn't
They're
that.
A mature,
and you know,
they have a mature relationship.
They do. They have a really good, solid relationship.
That's nice.
And, you know, he didn't realize it was Valentine's Day when they scheduled it and all of that, you know.
Well, Valentine's Day is such a curious holiday anyway.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah.
Is it? I think, you know, we get, oh, well, so her comment was, speaking of curious holiday, so many people issue it, you know, because it's a Hallmark holiday and it's so commercial and it's just so all these things. And it is. But she said her she looks at that day as a day to love everybody. And mm-hmm. she said, I just think, you know, if we'd get away from this romance one-on-one, you know, your grandma needs a happy Valentine's love and yeah. just general people in the world, that it should just be a love everybody day. And I really liked that.
No, I think that's a really great idea, is mm-hmm. that it sort of focused on people that mean something to you in your life.
Yeah.
And finding a couple who don't.
Well, I think there's a couple.
There are a couple. Yeah,
there are a couple, maybe. Yeah.
Encourage them.
But, you know, the other thing about Valentine's Day, don't you think, I mean, isn't it kind of a woman thing? Talk about the grocery store.
Yeah, well, for instance, I was telling Linda earlier that I was at Thriftway on Valentine's Day, and you don't see any women looking crazed, but you see a lot of men that are just sort of roaming the halls mm-hmm. of Thriftway going, what do I do? You know, like some would have, they had a couple of roses in there yeah. in their basket. Some had some chocolates, but there was sort of the deer in the headlights about like, I hope I'm doing the right thing.
I always feel bad for them and I see them.
Yeah, there was pressure.
Yeah, it is pressure. But isn't the pressure, I know this is sexist, so excuse me, but mm-hmm. the pressure comes from women most of the time, and the men feel the pressure from the woman.
Yeah, I'm probably going to stay 10 feet off, a 10-foot pole away from this, but it is sort of odd. It's one of those holidays where it's sort of weird. In its own way, it's created kind of a sexist holiday, I think.
Yeah.
That, like when I used to work in offices and stuff, mm-hmm. it would be, there's this weird sort of hierarchy of who got flowers at the office and who didn't. And it was just the weirdest thing.
It's kind of like a badge of honor or something. Yeah. If you get
somebody didn't spend, you know, $80 on red roses for me.
I know.
But
that would be a waste for me.
Oh, absolutely.
A total waste.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Take me out to Jazz Alley.
Yeah.
I'll love you even more.
Even more. Or just, you know, make me a bowl of soup. It's fine. Yeah. I don't care. Yeah.
This is great. We have no love interest in our life, but we are experts on this. And that is why we are single.
Do you think?
Well, yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Because otherwise we'd have to look internally at ourselves.
And that's always such a mess.
Oh, I don't
that
know.
Is a mess.
I don't like to scratch that surface.
No. Let's just keep going.
It's like we have issues.
Hey, I have something really meaningful to tell you. Do you remember, I don't know, it was either last episode or episode before, I was talking about the book Blood, Bones, and Butter?
Yeah, by the author who...
Gabrielle Hamilton.
Who owns Prune in New York.
Yes.
Yes.
And so we were talking about that, and I was waxing poetic about her writing abilities, and I don't know, we just talked about her, and she's reopening, et cetera, et cetera. And somewhere in that conversation, I said that I had that book. It's my favorite chef-written book in the whole wide world. But I lent it to somebody and I don't know where it is mm-hmm. and I don't have it anymore. And it's kind of a hole, but, you know, I'm not going to buy another one. So somebody out there dropped off a big envelope in at the studio, at the KVSH LP studio.
In downtown Vashon Island,
Washington. And it was addressed in block letters. Like letters that you can't recognize.
Oh, because you couldn't take the writs.
You can't recognize the writing.
Almost as if it was like when they cut out letters from a newspaper and tape it for a ransom.
For that they're going to murder you
exactly.
next week. Yeah. But and then up in the return address, it said, a fan of Stirring the Pot.
Yay.
And I opened it and it was Blood, Bones, and Butter in hardcover right there, just like my old book. And I have no idea. So whoever you are out there, you little angel, you made me
cry. How delicious.
You made me cry. I welled up and it was like, oh my gosh, somebody really listens and somebody really cares. Thank you.
Yeah, how lovely is that?
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm so happy to have it back. Really
that is a really delightful
yeah.
little happenstance from our radio show. Let's see, what have I lost? Oh, I lost a 69 Jaguar XKE. Let's see if this works.
It'll show up next
It'll
week.
It'll show up next week on the tour.
Yeah. The other thing that happened this week was I was bound and determined to make pavlova because there's so many eggs and I had so many eggs and egg whites. But
oh, yeah. Tell our gentle listeners what pavlova is.
Well, pavlova is Australian and it is a dessert with meringue. It's basically a meringue and you make a big meringue on a cookie sheet.
Mm-hmm.
put it in your oven, cook it slowly for a long time, and then you even leave the oven door closed. Never open the oven door mm-hmm. and let it sit overnight. So the outside gets real crunchy, that mm-hmm. real crunchy meringue-y thing. And then the inside is kind of marshmallowy and creamy. It's so good. Mm-hmm. And then over the top of that, traditionally, Australians would put passion fruit glaze over the top of it because it's got a little bit of a sour uh-huh. taste to it to compensate for so much sweetness because it is very sweet. The meringue is very sweet. And then all kinds of fruit, whatever you want to put on there, you know. So I was going to do that, and I got the best recipe in the whole world from tried and true Patty Hanmer. Gave me her recipe for pavlova. So
because she used to live in Australia, didn't she?
She did for a while.
I want to say she's from South Africa originally.
No, she's from England.
Oh, then she lived in South Africa. Maybe.
Patty, we'll have to have you on the show.
We'll have to get your bio.
Get the dirt. Exactly. But anyway, Patty's a fabulous chef, and she knows. She knows.
She knows her stuff.
And I have the recipe, so I promise I'm going to do it this week, and I'll tell you, because I've never done it, and it's kind of tricky, and mm-hmm. I just want to see if I can do it. So
yeah, and it's such a great dessert for any time of the year, because you can pretty much add, it's basically a meringue whipped cream, and mm-hmm. then any fruit that's seasonal mm-hmm. or, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah. I think blackberries would be really good.
It's great in summer because it's a light, fresh dessert.
Yeah.
Well, good for you.
I know. And then, you know, we've been talking about eggs lately a lot. Because, you know, all winter long, it was like, oh, my God, I got to buy grocery store eggs. I'm so depressed.
I know. Those little runny things.
Well, Little Miss Hannah Green's eggs are fresh and lovely again.
Yeah, finally. She's the chicken whisperer,
yeah,
that girl.
Yeah, she really is the chicken and duck whisperer. So I got duck and chicken eggs, and then now I have so many eggs in my refrigerator I need to do stuff with.
What are you going
to
do with the duck eggs?
Well, I bake with duck eggs. Mm-hmm. I love to bake with duck eggs. And I made egg salad, and I love egg salad mm-hmm. with duck eggs. They're really good. But then I still had so many, and I didn't want to make pavlova, so I made more egg salad. But this time I went into a Mexican egg salad. And I'm going to post this recipe on our Facebook page because it was so good. And it's just Mexican food, you know. It's got a red pepper in it and some garlic and celery and the stuff that mm-hmm. we usually do in the mayonnaise. But it has cilantro, lime, and a mashed avocado that you stir in with the eggs.
Creamy, crunchy.
Mm-hmm. Some mayo, some cumin, mm-hmm. little chili powder. You can hot it up with some, you know, cayenne or... Well,
that's pretty good. I had my recent egg experience was a bit of a mishap.
What happened?
This morning I was going over to a friend's house to celebrate. She's starting to work on her house and getting it fixed up. So mm-hmm. I was dropping off a card, and I had Buddy in the car with me, and there was a chicken. I'd let my chickens out the day before, and I saw that one had laid an egg. Mm-hmm. You know. Under a bush. And so I grabbed it. I put it in my, I just put it in where your drink holder in my car.
In the car.
You know, and you know when you do that and you go like, that's probably not a good idea, but you still do it, you know? And I'm going, mm-hmm. well, what can happen? You know, I'll tell you what can happen. Buddy decides he wants to, I have treats over in the side pocket and he wanted a treat while I was driving and I'm pushing him off of me. He said, Buddy, this is not the time or place. And he puts his big fat bulldog paw into the cup holder, which is holding the egg.
Of course.
And I have two cup holders on the console.
Yeah.
This is the one that doesn't have an insert. So it doesn't come out to rinse easily.
So you have to really clean it.
I have to clean it. And yeah. So I showed Linda a picture of it. It looks like you basically whipped up some scrambled eggs and poured it into your cup holder in your car.
That's exactly
it's
what
still
it looks
there.
Like, except you did get a few shells in those scrambled eggs.
I did. and it's still there. So luckily we're not in Arizona and it's not hot. So
yeah.
When I go home, first call of duty is to clean that out.
Clean that out. Get that taken care of. Well, for those of you who don't know, Tom has a bulldog whose name is Buddy. And I don't know, how much does Buddy weigh? Do you know?
Buddy is a solid 70 pounds,
yeah.
69, 70
pounds.
Yeah,
I would say that. Yeah. And he is darling. He's just, he's a bulldog and I really love him. So we will have more Buddy stories. We always do.
Yeah.
So Tom, what's going on in town? What's going on in event wise or restaurant news? Do you know anything new?
Well, let's see. Oh, you know, I, I just read where Gravy is reopening after their winter break, which is
they're
great.
Back.
They're
okay.
back. It'll be on
Good.
The 17th is when they open up, and Dre will
Friday.
Be back. And, you know, I love Dre because, you know, he does some awesome research,
usually
in Italy and usually at lots of restaurants. So, Dre, we're coming yeah. in and we're seeing what you learned. I don't think he needs to learn anything. He's such a great chef.
But keeps upping the game.
Yeah, it's always fun to see what he is inspired by on his travels, on his winter break. The other thing is, I dropped by Snapdragon this weekend because they were celebrating their 10-year anniversary.
Wow.
And they were there even earlier than that, but it was 10 years of Snapdragon.
But Monkey Tree
before, yeah. I think they were there five.
Was that theirs too?
That was theirs too,
okay,
yeah.
Because that was before my time.
Yeah, it was really nice. And mm-hmm. everybody's in the back where they had, in the outside part.
Oh, such a nice
They had
patio.
little chimichangas, not chimichangas, what do you call them? Chirimias. They're basically like a little wood stove out in the patio. Chimoyas.
Chimaria.
I don't know.
One of those
I like chimichangas.
Chimichurris.
Chimichurris, there you go. But anyway, it was really nice, and they were... they were feeling the love from Vashon for being here 10 years. And so that was a nice little thing.
That is a big deal.
And then, let's see, was there anything else? Oh, yeah. I had a friend of mine say she had the best pork chop this week at the hardware store. And then Linda told me that there's a new chef.
There's a new chef. I don't know his name. I know a friend of mine told me that he was here. And it's really exciting because he's a very good chef, and he's from Seattle, and he commutes over every day.
Wow.
Yeah, so
that's
a big
commitment.
Deal. Yeah, it is commitment. So it'll be fun to see what they do with the menu there because it needs a little reworking.
It'll be fun to, they're pretty consistent, you know.
And there's the old favorites that you can't not have.
Yes, yeah.
You know, you got to have those old
like
favorites.
Like the chicken fried salad.
Buttermilk fried chicken salad.
That's probably my favorite.
That is so good. That's
and the Vashon breakfast.
Well, then there's that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, anything else on events? Is there?
I haven't seen anything other than that. Oh yeah, the Anchor, the smoothie and oatmeal stand is right between Giraffe and Camp Colvo's.
Yeah, what's that?
It's the
Anchor one.
Yeah, the Anchor. It's like it's a food truck.
I thought it was going to be at the
So did I.
Gym, but it's not.
No, it's right between their park right across the street.
I just thought maybe it was temporary. Oh, good.
Yeah. And so that's probably a better place anyway.
Probably a better location for them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm hearing rave reviews with all sorts of interesting smoothies and then different oatmeals, you know.
Healthy food. Yeah. Well, that's nice. That's a good switch.
Yeah. It's right next to Camp Colvo's, which has two new covered patios, which is great because you know we don't like being rained on.
Well, and we do like to sit outside and watch all the people go by.
It's true. Yeah,
it's really
like
true.
Being in South Beach here.
Yeah. Well, okay.
The beautiful people come to Vashon to look at things,
and we like to watch them.
We like to watch and go. Oh, they're fabulous.
Hey, did you have enough coffee today?
Boy, I had way too much coffee today.
Did you?
I'm so bad. I drink too much.
Oh, I do too, but I don't know. I read a study.
Yeah?
Get this. I read a study. Imagine. That instant coffee's bad for you. That doesn't have any health benefits.
Seriously?
However, coffee does. And this was a study done in the UK. And about 500,000 Britons enrolled in this study about what does coffee do to you and is it healthy or is it terrible? And in the end, the study revealed that the moderate coffee drinkers, up to 3 cups a day, is moderate.
Mm-hmm.
So when they say cups, they're talking about 8 ounces. They're
mine
not
are
talking
usually
about
12
a mug.
Mine's about 12 ounces,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, mine too, I think. Where is it? If you drink up to 3 cups a day, you're 12% less likely to die over the next 11 years.
Well, I am going to live. Just call me Methuselah.
I know.
Yeah.
It just kind of struck me funny because how do they know 11 years?
I love it. It seems seemingly arbitrary, doesn't it?
It does. But those who abstained from coffee did not have that benefit.
Hmm.
So...
Well, that's good to know.
I know, it's really good to know. And I think what they said about the, well, ground coffee is associated with decreased all-cause and cardiovascular mortality. It's good for your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Here, I can't find it. Dang it.
What you looking for?
They found that statistically, instant coffee doesn't even come close. It's not the same thing. It really isn't coffee. It's just, I mean, it's been freeze-dried and it's been all those things, but it's been so highly processed that it's lost.
The good thing about
the good stuff,
the coffee is the oils and when you first brew it, and you can see sort of the oil sheen of the coffee oils.
Well, and they were talking in
the crema.
And the crema. They were talking in the article about the additives that they have to use for that process.
Oh.
You know, mm-hmm. So there's that too.
Yeah.
I, however, am a big fan of instant espresso, megalodoro.
No, I'm a huge fan of that stuff.
And I put
for
that
cooking.
In cooking. Oh, for cooking.
Yeah,
for sure.
For baking.
But if I ever run out of coffee,
mm-hmm.
I always have a can of sweetened condensed milk in my pantry.
Holy moly, Mildred.
Always, yeah. And then that megalodoro instant coffee. And if you make that really strong and put that sweetened condensed milk.
That's Cuban coffee.
It's Cuban.
It's Cuban
You're
coffee.
You're totally going to Cuba.
When I visit my sister in Miami, and I'm always like just this coffee hound going to find all the little, you know, Cuban coffee stands near her house.
Uh-huh.
And she, I don't think she's ever even tried coffee in her whole entire life. And she'll look at me and make this like pinched face and go like, I can't believe you like that stuff. And I'm going, I can't believe you don't.
How can you not?
Exactly. Yeah. But they use the sweetened condensed little, you know, cafe.
You
there.
Like a little cafe with your sweetened condensed milk.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah.
It is like, it's great.
It's so good. What your gardening, what's going on in the garden right now?
Oh, do you want to talk about that, or do you want to talk about, since we're talking about coffee and brain food, do you want to talk about brain food? Do you want to talk about coffee? We can talk about garden.
Well, we skipped over a little thing on the outline here, so we can talk about whatever you want to talk about, Tom.
You know, we can talk about gardening, because then we can talk about brain food after that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
since we're the brainiacs.
We are professionals here. We're
all prepared.
We're so prepared we can't decide which subject we want to talk about. Yeah, I think gardening, Linda and I were talking about things to talk about on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're riveted and leaning, you know, leaning into your radio and the jukebox. And one of the things we thought, you know, that to tie into cooking is gardening. And I'm an avid gardener. I've always been an avid gardener since I was a wee boy when we lived in Japan, mm-hmm. and then a wee boy when we lived in South Carolina, and a wee boy when we lived in Alabama. I mean, you just
love gardening.
I love gardening. And it was like, the big deal was, To appease my whiny self, my parents would give me a plot to dig in, you know, in the yard. And usually it was a rental, so I had to make it look exactly like what it was
mm-hmm.
afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But I digress. So gardening, yeah. What's really great about this time of the year is it's a really good planning time. And you can really, it's a really good time to sort of dream about your garden, what mm-hmm. you want to cook, and learn a little. I mean, it's really great to do some research and to talk to people who do garden, because there are some things that, you know, the forces that be in the gardening world, a commercial production,
mm-hmm.
they make you anxious over things you don't need to be anxious by. Like people go, I haven't planted my sweet peas. Well, you know, if you plant your sweet peas, they're just going to get eaten by slugs anyway. So just simmer down,
and plant something else.
Plant them between now and May.
Yeah.
They'll be fine. And you don't have to plant them in October. They even have people now planting them in October.
They do?
Which you can in our climate. But, and then they just sort of slowly sit there all winter mm-hmm. and their roots develop. It's sort of a nice thing. But what you do is it's basically like you're putting a pork loin out in the water and hoping a shark doesn't eat it. You know, it's in the garden, and everything that is hungry in the winter wants to eat
all
it.
All the birds.
And even if it's in a cold frame, it's going to be a slug. If it's in your greenhouse, mm-hmm. birds sneak in your greenhouse, and they love to pull up the little pea mm-hmm. plants. So I say relax, plant them, you know, any time between now and when the frost, you know, frost free. Mm-hmm. So anyway, snap peas, pea pods, mm-hmm. those are really good. Your kales are great to plant now.
Is it time to plant radishes, or is that later?
No, you can. I would wait a little longer. Mm-hmm. You know, you could do it now. It's,
but you know, everybody, I'm the only non-gardener I know.
Mm-hmm.
And I always feel less than around gardeners because
as you should.
I know. I do. I take my place.
Oh, Linda. She buys broccoli.
She buys broccoli. But you know, the gardeners, I love the gardeners. There's such heat and passion behind what they say. And starting in about December, they start talking about when the catalogs are going to come. Yeah. And then the catalogs start coming probably in January, I think.
Yeah.
And now.
Well, what's funny is they used to come. The whole COVID thing is really rushed things.
Oh.
There's such a pent-up demand that basically catalogs are now coming around Christmas, which never happened.
Oh, yeah.
And so they're coming a couple months earlier. People are they're selling out of things, which is just nuts.
It is nuts.
In fact, I was lucky enough to go to this great little seminar this week over at Co-Housing, and it was put on by Vega and Raintree Nursery, and it was about people who grow things, you know, growers, farmers, and so I was there, and they were trying to educate us on growing nursery stock, from raspberries to blackberries, tayberries, honeyberry, pomegranate, things that nurseries need and they can't get. And so it wasn't like you were growing it. You weren't growing it as a food crop. You were growing it as a nursery stock for the nurseries to sell as a food crop.
That's a wonderful thing. Are you going to do that?
Yeah, I think I might. I'm really going to. There's a lot of different and everything from grapevines to blueberries. And then if you usually the things like fruit trees, those are done at a more commercial level. But the other things, like even rhubarb, they'd lost their source for rhubarb. This Raintree, they were having a hard time getting it. So back to the gardening thing, the thing that's good to know about winter gardening is planning, figuring it out, you know, don't be anxiety ridden over. I haven't planted this.
Do you make a map?
No.
You just plant, I'm going to put this here and I'm going to put that over there.
All of my gardening is in my fabulously retentive head.
Yeah.
No, I am a very, you know, I don't know. As a gardener, I tend to sort of plant. I do sketches and I draw, but I don't do a detailed. I have friends who do detailed, and God bless them because they have great gardens.
And I love looking at those plans. I just love looking at them, like the maps. Yeah.
But the one thing I was going to say, if you were going to think of anything about gardening right now, this is a really great time to buy or purchase things that are like bare root or dormant.
Mm-hmm.
So more permanent plants like berries, raspberries, blackberries, tayberries, gooseberries.
Mm.
You can find them at nurseries now when you usually can't find them later in the year. And also rhubarb crowns, horseradish. If you want to grow your own horseradish, you can find the tubers now at nurseries.
Do you know, I have a story about horseradish. I was raised on the prairie in Montana, and my dad and mom used to...
No, I was just smiling because I think that should be like a book or a song. I was raised on the prairies of Montana.
Tom.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'll let you finish.
Anyway, you know, there's a lot of history and lore in that part of the country, and my dad used to take us out to go dig horseradish, which is not native to Montana up there in that area. And how it got there?
Yeah, how?
Is that the pioneers came and they brought it with them from places like Missouri and Oklahoma and places where it grows because they needed it and they loved it and they wanted it and they planted it. And now it's kind of growing all over in the prairie up there. And my dad knew where to go to get it. And he knew what little trails to follow and stuff. And then they'd spend 2 days in the kitchen with the most horrible stink. And, you know, horseradish is very hard to process. It's really hard to process.
It's real fibrous.
It's fibrous, and there's a lot of, you know, nuances to it, I guess. Mm-hmm. But, boy, is it
good. How do they process it?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I mean, you know,
Did you jar it or can it?
You cook it, and you can it, and you, I don't know, you put stuff in it. It's probably like a vinegar, like you do vinegar, sugar. You know, like if you picture that little jar of Beaver's horseradish. It doesn't have... My parents didn't ever have any creamy mayonnaise or any of that in it. It was just the horseradish.
I always like it because I was associated with prime rib. Thank you.
Yes. Yes, sir.
And
it's
a French
so good.
Dip.
Oh, so good. So good. So good. Yeah. Let's go back to brain food.
Oh, yeah.
What you, Tom, you made some discoveries this week about brain food.
Well,
we need all the help we can get in that.
I know. I was, have you ever seen, there's a drug that will remain nameless that they advertise. If you watch the news, I must be the target demographic for it. And it's like, hi, I'm a substitute teacher and we live in, we live in Hobo, Kansas. And, you know, I like to keep my brain on, and then he sort of pauses. And the more he talks, you're going like, I don't think this is working.
This is not the guy.
Yeah. But they tell you about how they take this medication and their brain is more active and stuff.
Oh, that one.
That one. Yeah. And you're kind of going like, I don't know.
I know.
Yeah.
Is it going to help me remember why I went into that room?
Exactly. Where I parked.
Yeah.
Or why am I wearing the different socks? No. So anyway, brain food. So I was looking at, I was interested to see like, you know, what are some of the natural foods out there mm-hmm. that have actual scientific evidence as being good for you?
Are there some?
Well, there are. And one of the things that's sort of ironic, but it's not really surprising, ironic yet not surprising,
is how astute.
Thank you. Is comfort food. Like you think of comfort food and you go like, oh, it makes me feel good. Yeah, but mm-hmm. it doesn't do anything to your brain cells, man.
No.
It's like,
it puts you to sleep.
Like mac and cheese or any of those things.
Mashed potatoes.
Yeah. Anything that is called comfort food, you can pretty much bank on is not helping your brain. But they said that one of the articles I read that your brain immediately absorbs or at least the nutrients, 20% of the food intake goes to your brain in most cases. So it seems like more should go, shouldn't it?
More should go.
Maybe I got that wrong. 20%, something.
No, that sounds, I mean, yeah. It doesn't matter.
Okay. Doesn't
keep,
matter.
Keep going.
Keep going. So anyway, so in
I say, you know, never let the facts get in the way of a good story.
Exactly.
I don't mean that.
No,
audience.
She doesn't.
I do not mean that, no. But I think it's hilarious.
She didn't win a Pulitzer Prize for nothing, did she? Oh, wait, she didn't. Okay, so back to one of the things, the articles I read was about treating depression, and that they said that there's empirical evidence that depression can lessen its effect by what you're eating. Chocolate is one of the things. Mm-hmm. The other one is leafy greens. Leafy greens have
there's empirical evidence.
Yeah,
for that
there is.
They've studied it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they have because they it also has to do with the proportion of nutrients to calories, and there's a real boost apparently in your brain if you have a high ratio of nutrients and phytonutrients, which are the other thing is that you should not be peeling anything. You wash it off and you eat that red apple skin and you eat that russet potato. The things that protect. Sort of as
a
very general.
Oh, what but a the good things, way to look at it.
The things that protect the fruit, with the exception of pineapple, we won't make you
well,
eat that.
We're not going to eat that. Yeah.
But the things that protect the outside of the fruit usually protect the inside of the person, you know, like beets or, you know, eggplant. If you keep eggplant.
Interesting. That, well, you know, I read an article not too long ago that was talking about depression and your gut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, probiotics, and you've got the wrong mix of, what do you call it in your gut?
Oh, I know what you mean.
Microbes, and you just have the wrong, so
there's... Did you say probiotics?
Yeah. 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 And so, it never comes back if you're depressed. So you need to, actually feed yourself the probiotics and the good things to get your gut back into level. I think you have to work with a doctor to do that because there's chemistry in it. But I think that's really encouraging for people who experience depression.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know, when you're depressed, you just want to have mac and cheese and potatoes and toast and grilled
and ice
cheese
cream
and ice cream and pie. And for me anyway.
Yeah, for
if
sure.
If I'm having a bad day, I want...
Chocolate's the only thing on the list that really, you know, is supposed to be pretty... It's
yeah, but it has to be dark, right?
Dark chocolate. Yeah. You don't... Yeah, you're not eating little truffles. But So regarding the leafy... I'll go through the list if you want. So kale, what's great about kale or spinach or arugula... collard greens, beet greens, chard, that they're great sources of fiber.
Okay.
They're great sources of fiber, folate, and vitamin C and A. So that's really good. And you can use them in stir fries and soups. And I'm not delaying our schedule, am I?
Well, I don't think so.
Do we have enough time?
We have a lot of stuff to talk about.
But oh, we do? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, we do. Oh, gosh. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just going on. I'll make it brief. You know, it's so funny. The more when Linda and I are organizing, we go through what we're going to talk about. It's actually maybe better if we don't.
Are you telling tales out of
school? I'm telling tales out of school. Yeah, because, this magic just doesn't happen.
That's right.
We have to plan it. And when we plan it, it's actually sometimes funnier when we don't plan it and we just have a general idea of what we're talking about.
And then we skip here and skip there. I forgot that. And yeah. You forget this. Yeah.
Okay. So I will make this quick.
Okay.
So you got your leafy greens, kids. Mm-hmm. Eat those. The other is colorful fruits and vegetables.
Eat the rainbow.
Yep, eat the rainbow. It says that the compounds in brightly colored fruits and vegetables like red peppers, blueberries, broccoli, eggplant can affect inflammation, memory, sleep, and mood.
Hmm.
And the superfoods for those are the reddish purplish foods, the power players as they call them. And you don't want to forget avocados. They're like another superfood. Yeah. And then the other thing is seafood. And that's because it's a good source of vitamin B12.
Does it
iron,
distinguish,
zinc.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Does it distinguish between shellfish and fish?
No, so the best ones are sardines, oysters, mussels, wild salmon, thank you, cod, and because they have the omega-3 fatty acids, and which is essential for brain health. And so that's the one you can, if you don't like seafood, you can get the same sort of effect in chia seeds, chia, and flax seeds, and even sea vegetables like seaweed.
Oh, like seaweed. Yeah, I love seaweed.
And then the other thing is nuts, beans, and seeds are basically, they're superfoods too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And last but not least, spices and herbs are always good, especially things like turmeric. They have lasting effects on your brain health, which is really good. And fermented foods.
Oh, yes, sure.
Because if they're raw, they have microorganisms like yeast and bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
And they found that, a recent study found that 6 servings a day of fermented foods can lower inflammation and improve the diversity of your gut
microbiome.
And then last but not least is chocolate. And they said that in this article I read that dark chocolate has a 70% reduced risk of depression symptoms.
How much do you have to eat?
Let's see if they say. They said it doesn't work for milk chocolate.
No, I knew it wouldn't.
It's the flavanols that that seem to do it.
I think they think one or two squares of that really dark, at least 70%.
Yeah.
Chocolate.
I do that as
as a treat.
As a
well, no wonder you're so smart.
That's why I'm so healthy and smart.
That's why you're so smart.
Anyway, so our brain foods. There you have brain foods in a
Excellent.
Very large shell. There
Thank
you go.
Thank you, Tom. I just think that's really interesting. I didn't notice blueberries.
Oh, blueberries are in there. I didn't get to those.
Oh, they are. Okay, good. Because we like blueberries.
And we do. And we blueberries are fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Talking about, I think we'll skip next one and talk about meringue.
Oh, we're saying goodbye to umami. Oh.
No, you say goodbye to your mommy.
Your mommy. Okay.
We are going to try to talk about umami, but I want to talk about the eggs first.
We gotcha.
Okay.
Yes.
We're sort of in egg season. And I think that, I was talking to somebody last week who was having really a lot of difficulty making meringue, afraid of it, like not going to do it because it's too scary.
Can you tell our gentle listeners, I know it seems like people should know what meringue is, but just,
so meringue, actually, it's really just a foam. It's just a foam that you make with egg whites. And all the fat in the egg is in the yolk. So you want to make sure when you crack your eggs into the bowl that, you separate them very well and not one drop of that egg gets, the yolk gets
Proteins annoyed. Break it,
it
down.
It will kill the meringue. And that's, a big mistake people make. Oh, that little bit's not going to hurt. And it does.
And you want your eggs to be room temperature. Like a lot of people get confused. They go, isn't it supposed to be cold? No, that's cream when you're whipping cream. So
room temperature.
I feel like I sound like Mr. Know-it-all. Well, that's cream. I'm sorry. No, that's right. Sugar and egg whites are all that's in there.
I don't pretend to know exactly the science of how it works, but what I know is that those they call them protein chains,
mm-hmm.
and the amino acids combine to create a foam, and then when you keep beating and beating and beating, it ends up in a meringue that you can use. Gosh, you can make meringue cookies. You can make meringue, mm-hmm.
Like angel food cake requires a meringue when in the batter. Don't you usually do? Not a meringue.
Does.
It does.
Yeah.
I mean, egg whites. Egg
well, it's
whites.
Egg whites. It's the
it's
same
egg whites,
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
And some people put a little cornstarch in their meringue for a lemon meringue pie or something. I don't do that.
What's that for?
Stabilize it a little bit.
Oh.
But I've never had any problem with the stabilizing. So I thought, what?
Oh, no, I just didn't. Do you have a, you know, everyone has a problem with weeping.
Mm-hmm. I know, I cry all the time.
Weeping where you get little water beads on your meringue.
Well, that's from cooking it too long in the oven. And how I make my meringue pie is I make a regular old French meringue. And we can talk about French, Swiss, and what's the other one? Italian. In a minute.
Okay.
But the trick is when you're making a lemon meringue pie or any meringue pie, mm-hmm. you want to make your meringue first and make it, it'll sit there, it'll hold, it'll be fine. And I use just a regular French meringue. I don't cook it. I don't put hot syrup in it. It's just the eggs and sugar.
And you'd call that's what people also, it's sort of like an American meringue,
yeah. And so another trick is put your finger in there when it's, you think it's done, it's mm-hmm. so fluffy, and if you feel any grains of sugar at all, you keep beating it until mm-hmm. it's just pure silk. Okay, so you've got your meringue done. That's all fluffed up in the bowl. Now you make your filling. So you're making your filling on top of the stove, and it's a mixture of lemon juice and water and, you know, whatever else you I use zest and sugar, mm-hmm. and it's a pudding.
Lemon curd, yeah.
Yeah, lemon curd kind of thing. And the second that lemon curd is done, you put it in your pre-baked pie shell and get that meringue on there right now while it's really hot.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens is if the filling has cooled off a little bit, the meringue doesn't have enough heat when it hits it to solidify it. So when it hits that hot filling, it cooks from the bottom up and the top down, which is why you think it's not cooked.
You know, that's really interesting, Linda. That's good info because it's sort of counterintuitive. I would think, because I didn't know that, I would think you want it to be cool.
Mm-hmm.
To
be nice to the eggs.
It's to be nice to the eggs.
Yeah.
And then what you're actually doing is you're creating a situation where you're going to get watery pie.
Yeah. And then, but don't cook it too long.
Yeah.
Or you get the little brown beads on the top.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, worst case scenario about that is mm-hmm. just get a paper towel and dab those little sweat beads off
mm-hmm.
and take your pie to your friend's house or have your friend over because nobody's going to complain about that.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you have to worry about leftover lemon meringue pie,
oh, I know.
We need to
I know.
Start back again
I
the
know.
Crust. And
so do you use, what's your meringue preference?
Oh, just a little background here. I go way, way back with meringue. Because I would make like the traditional meringue for like lemon meringue pie, and it would mm-hmm. always weep. That is, you know, mm-hmm. water beads all over mm-hmm. it. And I go like, meh. And so then I learned about, you know, when I started cooking, about the Swiss meringue and Italian meringue.
Mm-hmm.
And I like those better because they're more stable.
Mm-hmm.
But I also like them because I like the consistency of the meringue better. Like, for instance, a Swiss meringue is really easy to do. It sounds like it's a harder step, but what you end up doing is you end up pasteurizing, you cook the eggs, the egg whites. So what you're doing is you're putting in sugar and egg whites into, what I do is I just put it into a mixing bowl
mm-hmm.
and then I put it over a water bath.
Right.
And then you heat it to, I think, 160 mm-hmm. degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're whisking it just to get it all incorporated.
Yeah.
And then you put it on your mixer and the air whips, and that temperature change and that heating
mm-hmm.
makes it almost sort of like a marshmallowy.
It's a marshmallowy meringue.
It's more marshmallowy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then that's a Swiss meringue, but an Italian meringue is the most stable. I was going to do an Italian accent, but I can't do them. So I was going to go, Mamma mia, that is a stable meringue.
Oh, for God's sake. I'll be pulled
off the air.
Yeah, I know. In a minute.
For bad accents. Yeah. But what's so great about Italian meringue is it is the most stable. And what you do is you heat up the eggs to a certain... Wait a second. What do you do? How do you do it? I'm trying to think. Oh, you heat up the sugar to a certain temperature.
Oh, that's right.
I had to get this right.
Yeah.
You heat that up to I'm almost like 240 or something. It's really mm-hmm. a high temperature, mm-hmm. and you're getting the bubbly, you know, this sort of I think soft ball
mm-hmm.
Stage. And then you are streaming
and you drizzle
it
that
while it's mixing.
It's mixing the egg whites.
And you have to be careful because if you do it, if you don't do it in the right order or the right mm-hmm. time sequence, you have some of the most deliciously sweet egg whites you've yeah. that are like scrambled eggs kind of thing.
You know, that's a process you do for divinity as well
yes.
when you're making candy.
Yeah.
So it really Italian meringue is kind of candy.
It really is. And then most people use Italian meringue and Swiss meringue. They go to the trouble of doing the heating up,
mm-hmm.
number one, because some people like it because you're cooking, it cooks the eggs.
But, right, but we don't have to worry about that if you buy commercial eggs because they've been pasteurized.
Oh, they have?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Well, most of the time,
I think. Well, dang.
Maybe not. I don't know. I think they have.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I know that you can buy, like when you buy the egg white in a carton, mm-hmm. those are pasteurized.
Yeah, I think eggs are.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So, but what you usually do with the other ones, those other meringues is you add butter to them and it becomes a buttercream, Swiss meringue buttercream icing.
Well, and Swiss meringue is basically the same as 7-minute frosting.
That is correct.
You know, which is fabulous frosting.
Oh, you want to make sure you get to lick the bowl on that one.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that's really interesting to me about meringue is mm-hmm. that people are afraid of it because I grew up making meringue from the time I was a kid because it was so fun. Mm-hmm. To watch the whole process and see those big fluffy clouds coming up. And I guess I didn't know it was a problem.
Yeah, it's really good when you have... Ignorance is bliss when it comes to making certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was a little boy, like my mom is a great cook. And she would spoil us, you know, with... as far as like, not spoil us. But she really took the time when it was a special occasion, mm-hmm. like a birthday, to do something like she'd make a really nice cake.
Oh.
Like I didn't even know you could buy a cake, you know, until
yeah.
I was older.
Oh, I know.
And my favorite thing, some years when if it was not my birthday and I didn't get a cake, she'd make these meringues, and you'd put them on paper, and then she'd put them on paper bags on cookie sheets in
sure.
the oven, and they basically are baked. Like a meringue bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, when you'd get it'd be like in the winter and you get frozen strawberries that come in those little square tubs and you'd thaw them out. Those were good. And then you put strawberries in the middle, like a little strawberry soup and whipped cream.
How fun.
Yeah. That was one of my favorite desserts.
Yeah. Your mom's a good egg.
She's a good egg. She is.
So the whipping, the beating mm-hmm. part, I don't use a whisk because it wears me out. I mean, it's just a lot of whisking,
oh,
you know.
No, that's what electricity was made for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's how they used to use it, you know. And I started thinking about that. I started thinking, how did we invent a whisk? Where did that come from? And I looked it up and, you know, in the very beginning, like back in the pagan days and way back, mm-hmm. way back, they just, the kitchen cooks used a slender branch with twigs tied on it.
Oh, that makes sense.
You know, or they would tie twigs to a wooden spoon
mm-hmm.
so that they could get more froth and more beating and beating. And then from there came, I think in, 1890s maybe, the egg beater was invented. You know, the kind that you wind around and around and it's got the gears and they go opposite. And that changed many people's lives.
Yeah, that's a fun toy.
Yes, it is. And then from there it came to the electric.
Mm-hmm.
But the coolest story I found was that in 1963, Julia Child went on television to talk about her new cookbook, Mastering the Art of French Cooking. And it was a show called Everybody's Talking About My Book or Everybody, What's Everybody Reading?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. And it was a book show. And every other author that came in brought their books and their photographs and we're talking methodology and how we... work and what we do and why mm-hmm. this works and how wonderful I am. Well, Julia came in her inimitable style with a wire whisk. And she said, you know, this book teaches you how to use this French whisk, because it mm-hmm. was big in France. I mean, they'd use whisks forever.
Yeah.
And American housewives, I grew up with no whisk. We didn't have whisks. We didn't.
No, I don't recall ever having a whisk.
No. And so in the 60s, with Julia Child coming in, teaching people about how to use a whisk, it just kind of ballooned. And then this television station got so many comments about Julia Child that they approached her to start her television show. And that's how she got into television, was with her wire whisk.
So a wire whisk whisked her into...
I know.
Into
she
her show.
Right in there.
That's pretty great. You know, I saw a thing on America's Test Kitchen once about whisking.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how I used to always think you did this sort of oval or circular motion mm-hmm. when you're whipping things?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and you can do that. It doesn't really matter. But when you're doing whipped cream or you're doing eggs,
mm-hmm.
they did an experiment where they had all their little sub chefs, you know, lined
mm-hmm.
up.
Mm-hmm.
And they took their bowls of whipped cream. And they each had a different way. Some would do like a circle. Some would lift up the circle and make it a into and out of.
Sure.
And
sure.
then the other one was you just go back and forth in a almost mm-hmm. like a fast sweeping
yeah.
motion. And they found that it's much quicker doing the fast sweeping motion.
Is it? I was going to ask if they covered the figure eight.
Yes, and they did that too.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what the science was behind it. But just the going back and forth, mm-hmm. back and forth, and there was science to it. And
I'm sure there is.
But my geezer brain
There's
does not...
There's always science.
I couldn't remember what the reason was. But so when you're whipping egg whites or a cream, don't do a circle. Do it back and forth. If you use a whisk.
I use my handy little mixer.
Exactly.
Hey, I found another thing that I know you'll just love, Tom.
What?
I know that you know, for those of you who don't know, and I'm sure everyone does know, Tom is a fabulous writer. And he has a blog. Tall Clover Farm.com. It's really a wonderful blog.
Oh,
anyway,
thanks.
He's been experimenting with haikus lately, and I've been watching him with those, and I found a meringue haiku. Okay,
I love that. You know, I love haikus because they can take you places the limerick just can't.
Yeah, and get you there quicker than a long poem.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so here, this is called Meringue Haiku.
I love it.
Jagged meringue peaks etched on steel blue frosted skies. Perilous splendor.
Ooh.
Isn't that good?
That is good.
Okay, but here's another
There are many, many layers on that
there
meringue.
There are.
Yeah.
Like, what's that blue sky about?
We got
to look at that. And here's another little ditty that I found. It's called Her Flaky Crust, Her Tart-Like Ways. Lemon meringue pie makes me salivate from here to Alaska. I love her color, her texture, her sweet, her sugar, her sour. Her flaky crust, her tart lemon, her well-formed meringue. My mouth is dripping saliva as loudly as a dog's when I think of her. Oh, ever so toasty, tasty.
Mm.
So, you know, people are waxing poetic about meringue.
You know, I think that's... It doesn't get better than that.
It doesn't.
I wonder if we can find one about beef Wellington.
Hey, I read something about beef Wellington the other day, and I thought about you because we talked about how silly it is to try to make a vegetarian one.
Oh.
And this one was a vegetarian. Well, no, you still used... No, it was a vegetarian one, and it was all mushrooms.
Oh, wow. You know, I'm sure it would be good. It just seems like
good.
It'd be hard to do.
It'd be hard to do, but you make a, you know...
Like a log.
Of this mushroom, you know, you've sauteed and onions and all that. I don't know. It didn't interest me very much, but mm-hmm. it looked like if you're a vegetarian, that would be a good way.
Yeah, make a mushroom log.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so before the twigs and wooden spoon trick for a whisk,
mm-hmm.
there was the whisk in the 15th century. In Japan, and it was bamboo.
Oh, and they use those for a tea ceremony.
Yeah, and now, I mean, that's where it
started.
Yeah,
Nice.
It was just really interesting.
Do you know, there's a, I've been to a tea ceremony on the island I'm sure, I'm not sure anybody wants, you know, you never know, like, you don't want to go like, oh yeah, it's on 445-67 187th
oh,
Street,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it was one of these places where you can't even believe there's a little tea house back behind this house. And
in Seattle or
no,
on
Vashon.
Oh,
on Vashon.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and it was a friend of mine who invited me because he's a practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really something special.
Well, it's high tea like that. Japanese tea is really fun, and I love their... I just always think of them as brushes more than whisks
mm-hmm.
that they use.
But yeah.
That's a whole other thing to explore that we need to talk about another time.
It is.
I think. And I guess we're going to have to save our umami talk till next time.
And I won't even get to say, who's your mommy?
No.
But we can wet their whiskers with what umami is. Because mm-hmm. Even though, like, if you watch cooking shows, you can't spend a minute without hearing it. But if you're not watching a lot of cooking shows, mm-hmm. Well, let's explain what umami is.
It's a fascinating subject.
Yeah.
And it's a taste that some people deny. It's mm-hmm. Some people say it's not a taste. But it is a taste. I think that was my computer.
Okay.
And there are lots of ways to get there. And we have several suggestions, and we have recipes, and we have a whole thing we want to talk about on our next show.
Yeah.
About umami.
That'll be good. And it's sort of like, it's a dimension of flavor and taste.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, they're salty, sweet, bitter, you know, and this was discovered at some point as another facet of our taste dimension.
Yeah. And it was discovered, of course, in Japan.
Yes.
You know,
but wasn't translated until, you won't remember this next time we talk about it. 2002.
No, I already knew that.
Oh, did you know that? Oh.
Yeah. It was 2002. Umami.
And
you know, the Japanese, with the way they cook and the that good food, they knew it for centuries.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like
sure.
that. So let's talk about this new magazine I got.
Yeah, I can't believe that thing.
It's called Eaten, for any of you who are interested in food literature.
Please do spell.
E-A-T-E-N, Eaten.
Okay.
I have just eaten.
Oh, okay.
It's called Eaten, the food history magazine. And this particular issue is on breakfast. And it is 125 pages. It offers you further reading if this isn't enough. But it talks about espresso in different parts of the world, and it talks about people who eat fish for breakfast and what morning biscuits used to be like and on the hiking trails or the Oregon Trail and Rhode Island pancakes. Then it talks about Black Panthers from breakfast to freedom. And, you know, the Black Panthers were really quite wonderful people in their communities. They had community breakfasts, and they made sure that their community had the food that they needed, and they had free lunches for kids. But that's a whole other tangent. And I just wanted to let you know about this magazine because it has some of the best literary food writing in it that you'll ever read. And I don't know anybody.
Do you have to order it online, or can you get it locally?
You have to order it online. I don't know if you can get it locally. I order it online. Just go to Eaten magazine, and it should come up. So I find a lot of information in there, and it's just generally good reading and information as well. So did you have any new discoveries or anything else you want to talk about before we sign off?
We have sit back, everyone, don't cry, we only have a few minutes. you know, one of the things was I was like, when you get this random stuff in your feed and,
yeah.
And I'm signed up for everything. And so you get random feed 425.
Yeah.
So, the one I got was a chartreuse. And so maybe, I don't know if we have enough time for chartreuse, but I want to bring it up next time because it has a really fascinating history. And I think it's a really lovely.
I think I saw that.
Yeah.
I did. Is it Atlas Obscura?
Yeah.
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 I saw that. We should talk about that.
Yeah.
Next week,
it
next
was,
time.
The recipe formed in like, one that was made in 1024
mm-hmm.
A.D.
A.D.
A.D., baby.
I know.
I was just a wee lad then.
Well, I have lots of food plans for the weekend, which is coming up soon.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I know it's only Tuesday, but I'm already thinking about menus and things. Yeah, I have guests coming from out of town, so really looking forward
to that. Do they expect a nice meal?
Yeah, they'll expect one. Is it time? Okay. Oh, my gosh.
Wow, we flew through.
Oops, not that one. I was going to play our music, but I guess we're not going to do that right now.
We are professionals.
Yeah, and I've really got a handle on this board.
This
I'll
is
tell
local
you what.
So, radio.
Thank you for listening. You're listening to KVSHLP in Vashon, Washington. I'm Linda Nygaard.
And I'm Tom Conway.
And you've been listening to Stirring the Pot. And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
We love you. You're beautiful.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for my sweet little fairy who brought my book back. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.